Hello and welcome to What Else Do You Do? I'm your host, Masao. I'm an indie producer in Montreal working for Studio Cut to Bits. And today, our guest is Sam Sharma. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, listeners. I am Sam, Sam Sharma, as Masao introduced me. I work at Bungie as the director of product on Destiny 2. In my previous life, I've been an executive producer at EA. I've been a senior producer at Ubisoft on Far Cry 6, and previously on the Ghost Recon franchise. I've also been the senior producer on Horizon Zero Dawn back in the day. And yeah, and like way, way back in the day, I was the producer on FIFA for EA as well. So yeah, just been in the industry about 20 years and have gained a lot of experience and a lot of friends, and which are the ones that I value most.
Those are big games.
They're games that I'm glad people liked. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Typically on What Else Do You Do, we talk about, you know, what we do outside of video games, but this is part of the series of interviews of Asian devs working in the West. So let's talk about being an Asian dev working in the West.
For sure.
Start off, what is your ethnic background?
Yeah, my ethnic background is South Asian / Indian. That's a majority of my ethnic background. There's some okay. mix in there, but like largely, Indian, South Asian.
Okay. And where did you grow up?
A bunch of places. My dad had an interesting job. He was in the military, and I've had the privilege and the fortune to have lived in a bunch of places, including, India, Singapore, the Netherlands, England, Canada now, obviously, and Beijing for a while. So I've lived all over the world. It's been
a lot of different places.
Yeah.
So one of the questions that I've been asking is like, how Asian do you feel?
I feel pretty Asian, I'll be honest. There's my culture and my connection to it via what my mom and dad and my friends have kind of reinforced around me. But also, being in the West, they don't let you forget you're Asian often. sometimes in good ways, right? Or well-meaning ways, where somebody will always ask me what the best curry place in town is, which, you know, I am not the expert, but fine. I become the representation for my ethnicity often. Or sometimes rubbing up against the various ethnic and racial dynamics that exist in the West, especially mm-hmm. countries where there are multiple sort of ethnic groups coexisting together. It's natural, I find anyway, to notice where you stand and where you are, and being able to respect the privilege we have as Asians in many countries in the West, the model minority myth, and being mm-hmm. able to be seen as contributors, quote unquote, but also the various sort of stereotypes that come associated with it and the struggles therein. So I feel Asian all the time. I don't think there's a moment where I am not aware of my Asianness, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think that's been a consistent theme in the interview series, like where you live definitely impacts how Asian you feel.
Yeah.
Like I used to live in San Francisco before I moved to Montreal, and I think there I felt less Asian,
right?
Because it was less of a thing, so I just didn't really think about it as much. Whereas now I live in Montreal, and there's less Asians.
There are.
So yeah, so definitely I think about being Asian more. Whereas I grew up in Japan, and in Japan I didn't feel Asian at all because I'm half Japanese. My mother is Caucasian American. Right. And yeah, I didn't feel Asian at all. They definitely reminded me about how I was not Japanese. So it is kind of a weird idea about how, you know, your identity and how you feel about your identity is really driven by where you live.
Yeah, definitely. They're both the same thing, but not just the place you live, but the people that surround you often either reinforce what they think is the correct slot they fit you in. Like you mentioned, in Japan, you were constantly being reminded that you're not fully Japanese, versus when you moved to San Francisco, and that no longer became an issue because everybody else, or a huge percentage of everybody else, looked like you or felt like you, and it felt truly mm-hmm. like a melting pot. I've lived in Canada in three different cities. I've lived in Vancouver, I've lived in Toronto, and I've lived in Montreal. And yeah, definitely Montreal feels, well, the Montreal games industry is very different. It's got people from all backgrounds, but mm-hmm. outside of the games industry, Montreal feels a little bit like, you feel extremely Asian there.
Yeah, I mean, Vancouver is heavily Asian, right? So
yeah, Vancouver's pretty okay.
Heavily East Asian, I guess, specifically, or?
It's both. I think there's a huge South Asian community. There's a huge East Asian community. There was a huge pattern of immigration when Hong Kong was being transferred over to China from the UK.
Yeah.
And a bunch of people left Hong Kong to come to Vancouver. So there's a huge Hong Kong immigration population, multiple Japanese people, but South Asian representation is pretty huge too. Okay. The funny thing is, in North America, when you just say Asian to, the majority Caucasian people or white people, they don't think of me, right? The word Asian doesn't resonate with my face.
Yeah, it's true.
It resonates with more an East Asian ethnicity. And it's weird because in the UK, when you say Asian, my face is the first one that comes into mind. It is a big continent, but I sometimes feel like that divide is super fake. And the reason I'm saying that is Vancouver feels like that a little bit. The city itself is quite a nice mix and people live together and it's you don't really feel that Asian there. But there are suburbs that are almost exclusively South Asian or almost exclusively mm-hmm. East Asian, like Richmond and Surrey. And it feels like, why are these suburbs like these? But such is the path.
I mean, I guess that kind of happens, with any ethnic group, I feel like. Italians moved to North America and created their enclaves. And in Montreal, there's Little Italy, which is no longer that Italian. But I hear the north side, some of the northern side of suburbs of Montreal have pretty large Italian enclaves. And, the Portuguese are pretty concentrated. The plateau traditionally, I think, is a pretty Portuguese area. The Jewish yeah. people have their own. I guess it makes sense. I think practically it's probably one person goes there or a group of people go there and they form a community and other people move there. And then, businesses start to pop up and then it starts to concentrate. So
yeah. It's natural. I'm not speaking against it, but it just feels a little bit. But that's you brought up a really interesting point. That sense of belonging and that sense of community is the thing that I think Asian immigrants seek a lot. Even if you grew up in the West, even if you grew up elsewhere, you kind of seek it out often. Mm-hmm. And everybody has different appetite for it, depending on how you grew up and how much baggage or trauma you're carrying from your own culture. Whilst we can be very proud of our own cultures, we know that, there are pockets of darkness in there too, right?
So for sure.
It depends on how much you want to partake in it. Sometimes you visit a Little Italy or a Chinatown or a Little India once a week to just kind of get some groceries or eat some food, and sometimes you just end up making home there because that's where the community is and you want to mm-hmm. most interact with them, you want to be seen. I get it.
Yeah, I when I moved to North America, I actively kind of pushed away against it. I didn't have any Japanese friends. I didn't if I met Japanese people, I did not make a point of trying to befriend them. I had a lot of negative experiences growing up in Japan,
right,
being mixed, so that was definitely not something I really took part in. I specifically didn't live in particularly Asian areas and or Japanese areas, and now I'm in Montreal, and I guess I could live in specific suburbs that are more Asian, but the Japanese community is so small that I don't think there is even a Japanese area of Montreal to speak of. So,
yeah, I hear you. I had a very similar experience living in the West where I didn't actively shun South Asian communities, but I've made it a point not to live where the the majority of them have their own enclaves. I visit them to mm-hmm. get good food or just partake in the community or a cultural event. For me, it's been a thing. I've moved to North America, and you know, I'm living in Canada now, and I would very much like to make the most of it. There are pluses and minuses of Canada, but the definite plus is there. It's an immigration hub. People come from all over Europe, Asia, Africa, South America to make this their home. And if I'm not living somewhere where there's a bunch of different communities and a bunch of different people with different ideas that I can use to learn and kind of grow myself as a person, I'm kind of failing myself. I'm just kind of cultural curiosity. I think it's how I see it. I have huge cultural curiosity. I want to learn more. I want to see more. And the best way to do that is live around people who don't exactly look like me or speak like me. So I don't seek out white neighborhoods at all. But I also don't seek out South Asian neighborhoods. I love living in mixed neighborhoods where I can kind of just learn from different people and have pierogies and samosas the same day if I want to, like that yeah. kind of thing.
I think that's typically kind of been my approach as well to live in particular neighborhoods. It's never really been, it's been more like what, like culture, like where is it culturally interesting? How do, mm-hmm. you know, how comfortable I feel rather than, you know, particular ethnicities for sure.
Yeah.
So sure. we touched on it a little bit, but what do you think Asia even means? Like considering the fact that it encompasses so many different cultures and like such a geographically large area, you know?
Yeah.
Considering the fact that it starts all the way from Japan and it goes all the way to Israel, which is pretty nuts yeah. to consider that a single, you know, region
yeah,
or a exactly. group of people.
Yeah. It is, I think, what we often call the Middle East. There are better names for it. It is very different.
Yeah.
And it feels very different. South Asia is its own thing for sure. East Asia, the populations look different, feel different, eat different. A huge part of Russia is in Asia, which, you know,
North Asia is a whole nother bag that people never really talk about. And Central Asia is another area that's
Central Asia is a huge one too.
Frequently undiscussed area, I think.
Yeah.
Unless you're Russian, basically. Russian or Chinese, like they have their like geopolitical stuff going on there. So they I think talk about it a lot more than everybody else. But
yeah,
pretty much everybody else has kind of forgotten that they're even there.
Yeah, like when you talk about Asia and Asian people, like yeah, Northern and Central Asia are often overlooked in those conversations. Partly, I think it's East Asia is talked about as a monolith, but it's really not. Also,
I mean, you know, not at all.
East Asia's a monolith mostly because white people can't tell the difference between a Chinese person and a Korean person. Really, let's face it, right? East Asia is not a monolith at all. Like Korea feels very different. South Korea, anyway. I've never been to North. From Japan, which feels very different from Taiwan, which feels very different from just Chinese sort of mentality and their ethos, which feels very different from Thailand, from Vietnam, from like Singapore. And South Asia in and of itself also is not a monolith at all. Like, you know, brown people, sure, but Indian and Pakistanis often have a lot of commonalities because it was one country and then they drew a line over it. But that's only the north. The south of India feels extremely different. I've been to the east.
It's two completely different language groups, right? The Dravidian language group is different.
The Dravidian language group is, there's four major ones and they... The written script as well as the words are just not interchangeable at all. There's a couple of loan words here or there, like when Sanskrit used to be a thing, but otherwise completely different languages, different culture, older culture too. The Dravidian cultures, like poetry from that land dates back way, way before there was poetry in the northern part of the country. East Asia feels very extremely different. Nepal feels extremely different. Asia as a monolith is something I struggle with because at one point I wish people wouldn't club all of these different cultures together and they would understand the nuances and the differences. But at the same time, I find home in that identity. When people say Asian, I feel more at home than when people say Indian often because it's my friends look like different people. They come from different countries. And when they say Asian, it's all of my friends everywhere. it's not just my background, it's everybody's background. And definitely ethnically, we're if not a monolith, we as a community in North America are working together, or I hope we are in different cities. It differs between cities, I think. But we're working together to make sure that Asian representation is strong, that we feel each other's pains, or we understand the commonality of what that means. We're not children of slavery, but we are still, you know, sometimes fighting to get out of the second class citizen barrier. So it's that commonality of purpose, I think, unites us, and I hope it does anyway. So it makes me feel a sense of belonging when somebody says Asian, but also I struggle with the concept of Asia when it's all the way from Israel to Japan. So it's weird. Yeah. I wish it would never go away, because I feel like I'm home when you create an ethnicity that large. But I also struggle with explaining Asian to people, because it's so varied, it's so different. The food groups are so different. Mongolian food, oh my God, is so different from anything else I've ever eaten. Like, it's insane how the further you get away from one point that you draw on the map to another, how different the cultures and the food get. I think there are some commonalities. Tea is one of them. Tea unites us 100%.
Yeah, it's true. Tea, I think rice and most of the
yeah, definitely Asian territories. Rice. Yeah. Once again,
there are more wheat centric Asian countries as well, but regions.
Yeah, and they value their bread for sure, but rice is still a staple. It's not like rice is non-existent in those cultures either.
Yeah.
Rice definitely, yeah, unites all these cultures. And bread, every country has their own bread. Yeah, bread's a big part of life. But we're not, you know, if you were to divide Europe and Asia, I think it would be bread.
Japan has had a bread culture of less than probably about 100 years, probably a little more than 100 years. It was introduced to them in the, I'd say, the late 1800s by Westerners. Okay.
Wow.
I mean, there are things that are specific to Japan, but they're basically just kind of Japanese versions of existing European breads.
Right. That's interesting.
Okay, so since this is theoretically a video game podcast, let's talk about the games industry a little bit.
Let's do it.
What are some experiences that you've had in the games industry that you think are specific to you being Asian?
Oh, that's a big topic. yeah.
This is a big topic podcast.
I'm excited for it. This is purely my experience, so I
don't
mean to come off as, oh, this is the Asian experience in the games industry. I think a lot of Asian people, especially whose culture has a huge hand in how they were brought up, have a very different work ethos, is what I found. A huge part of that is respect and kindness and building a sense of community, and just a crazy work ethic. Asian people, East Asia, South Asia, we all just tend to work ourselves to the bone and get burnout. Very common. One of the things that I've noticed in the 20 years I've been here, which is very interesting to me, is the thing, I'm sure it's not as big or small to many people, but for me it's been a theme that I've struggled with, is there's an expectation to act like a certain person within the games industry, especially in AAA. There's an expectation that you'd be forceful and that you'd be the loudest voice in the room. And that's an expectation that's on everybody, but it doesn't come naturally to a lot of Asian people. It doesn't come naturally to me because of the way I've been brought up. Being rude or being unkind to people or being just the loudest voice in the room is not something that is a natural construct of who I am. And that, I think, a bunch of people in the games industry and have not yet grappled with that truth, that when you hire people from underrepresented genders or underrepresented ethnicities, you have to reset your expectations of how they work. You have to becoming a more inclusive workplace is not about having a South Asian games night or a women in industry night and then calling it a day. It's actively about looking at the biases you have from being a predominantly Western studio and changing those biases so everybody can be as effective as they can. And I don't think our industry's grappled with that yet fully. I think we still value, at least in AAA, the loudest person in the room, the person who speaks a lot, or the person who's always forceful about the way they send their message. I've had to adapt my style over time, and that changes your personality over time, that changes who you are over time. My wish, honestly, for future Asian people joining the games industry would be that they don't have to go through that, that we've changed that setting. So it's also a toxic setting, mm-hmm. taken to the extreme in many AAA studios. But even in the nicer places, I wish we would reset that expectation and understand how we value skill versus how we value the presentation of, I'm going to get a little NPC, but the presentation of whiteness that is expected of Asian people because they're the quote-unquote model minority. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I got heavy, didn't I?
Oh, no, I'm just kind of reflecting kind of my experience as well, because I worked at Ubisoft for 13 years and then started an indie studio with my friends. We co-founded it together a couple years ago. And I think about the way that we work, and you know, the way that I was kind of like taught to make video games. And it's very true. It's a very like aggressive, confrontational environment frequently. Even if, you know, you are being respectful and you are being polite, the confrontation is very direct and upfront. Like, I don't like this. I want this. Mm-hmm. You know, my ideas are better than the ideas that are being presented. And I think we have kind of, you know, even in our studio, we're a team of six, you know, and most of us have known each other for over 10 years. So we do know how to talk to each other and we do know how to get along, but we are pretty confrontational. And I'm, as I think about like kind of expanding the studio and adding more people to it, like it is something that we do need to keep in mind, that we are not, that we're making the workplace more accessible to people who don't want to argue with us to our face.
Yeah. And it's a personality difference. I'm sure it's not just Asian. There's many people who have that personality and their skill set is still, you know, highly valuable. But I found that expectation is often laden unfairly on Asian people. In the 20 years I've been in the industry, I've seen it. I fought against it. I protected my team as much as I could. Like, he doesn't speak that much in meetings. He sends wonderful emails. He's a great designer, but he doesn't speak that much in meetings. Like, he doesn't have to. We just need to adapt our style. Or often that same unfair expectation is laden on women sometimes. It's that she's not loud enough, or she's not whatever, she's not forceful enough. And
she is loud enough, and then she's going to be seen as a, you know, a problem, 100%. Or toxic, yeah. Or a bitch, exactly. Or whatever, you know, like it's an impossible situation that a lot of them are put in.
Yeah, and mirroring what we've seen in our society here in Canada and the USA, mirroring that behavior takes you far away from who you are as a person, your core, and that's not healthy in the long term. We are human beings. We're a complex product of emotions and experiences and our previous trauma and our current experiences, and it changes us. I'm not saying change is bad. What I'm saying is that change, that internal change that you've not noticed, if you aren't conscious about it, if you're not working to understand how you're shifting your perspective, how your perspective has shifted over the last, say, 2 to 3 years, it takes a toll on people's mental health. And that's something that I think we haven't fully grappled with as an industry yet. What we've done is we've become more open to talk about mental health issues, but we've still put the burden on the individual.
For sure.
Like, hey, oh, you have mental health issues, you can come to us and we don't mind, and you can talk about it, you can be open about it. And here's an app that you can download that we bought for you as a studio. But we don't look inwards as an industry and go, maybe there are constructs here that we need to kind of unpack a little bit and reset some expectations so that vast change in human experience doesn't happen within the industry. There are many other industries where you come in a certain person and then you exit a very different person because you've changed. I'm sure everybody does that, like doctors and lawyers. But there's a there's a huge shift in who you are as a person in 2 to 3 years in the games industry that I notice within my friends and everybody else. And I go, we're not looking at this. And so when you, and this is across the board, right? But when you talked about being Asian, that's the one thing I noticed about being Asian is that we're changing Asian people to become closer to what the default expectation is of what a games industry person or a games industry leader ought to be. And we're not resetting the industry and going, there's another way to do this and another way is possible. That's a big theme for me that I've noticed. I mean, I am 40 years old. I've been in the industry 20 years. I will always talk about like things in bigger terms. Mm-hmm. So yourself and listeners should take that with a pinch of salt, obviously. I am crusty. The other thing I think, being an Asian, not to change topics, but that I've noticed about the games industry or being an Asian in the industry is a positive. Is I'm seeing more and more Asian representation in our media. We're not afraid to put an Asian person on in a trailer or on a box or a JPEG image promoting the game, which there wasn't that much of when I joined the industry.
Or even 10 years ago, I feel like, like even putting a woman on the cover, you would get a marketing guy telling you like, no, we can't do that. It's going to cut our sales in half.
Yeah. Like,
even when it wasn't true, that was what was so confusing about like that kind of marketing dialogue. It's like, like you have games like Tomb Raider selling, but somehow the marketing committee is like, no, we absolutely cannot have a female character on the cover.
Yeah, exactly. It's been a theme of our industry for a very long time. Put the default on the cover. Do not question it. That's how these things work. And I think a shift in our perspective has come from the move to digital. A bunch of the indies even, right? Everything was cordoned off by distribution. You had to make a box. You had to print the cover. You had to print a CD. You had to put them together, package it, and make sure you send it to whatever, Best Buy or Walmart or GameStop, and make sure they stock it. And that barrier stopped a bunch of indies from coming out and being able to do interesting things because they couldn't find that distribution access.
Yeah, they couldn't even get the real estate. Yeah,
even if you had money.
And even publishers. Like, there were almost no indie publishers back in the day when they had to make... I mean, it just doesn't make any sense, like, in terms of, like, the number of sales you need.
So the shift to digital has not only changed the kind of games we can make now, because anybody in their basement can actually just publish a game and put an Asian person on the cover, or put a black person on the cover, or put a black trans woman on the cover and be like, that's the game I'm making and I'm putting it up on Steam. And if 7 people buy it, so be it. That has really changed the kind of stories we're willing to tell. That has changed shifted a huge part of that industry dominant understanding. And also, because it's now become digital, marketing can now better measure who's buying these games, what are they playing, how much time are they spending playing these games, what other games are they playing. They can measure it, they can see it, and that has changed their perspective as well. Previously, when you were just putting boxes in off Tomb Raider on the shelves, the understanding was teenage boys are coming in and buying Tomb Raider, and they're going to buy the next whatever game, Shooty McShootface, with a white dude on the cover, and nothing else is going to sell. But now you can measure that data. You can see what people are interested in. You can see what big percentage of the game's audience is. Women, Asians, black people. And then you go, oh, okay, I think we can sell this game, even if you put an Asian person on the cover, or a woman on the cover, or a black person on the cover. And I'm thankful for it. That shift has really kind of been positive. And as an Asian person, that's been really heartening to see. I work on Destiny, and for obvious reasons, the Drifter is my favorite character, because Asians in Space, Bran. Asians in Space. That's if there's one thing I'm passionate about is seeing more Asian people in space. I grew up watching Star Wars and not seeing Asian people in space.
It's true. Sci-fi has always been very white.
Yeah. And Star Trek was the one place where we had some representation with Zulu. And I'm sort of like, yeah, Asians in space. That's my thing. It used to be, I mean, a friend of mine, that's how we used to say bye to each other, just Asians in space, Asians in space. It's a huge thing for me. So yeah, I love the Drifter. I know a bunch of people don't like Gambit, but I'm just like, the Drifters, yeah, I stan. Yeah, and that's been heartening to see. I think there's a lot of debate about how we're represented in these games and what games we're represented in, and I'm happy to learn more from various perspectives, what people like and what they don't. But I'm just happy to see that things are changing very slightly, man, very slightly. But they are. Like, you'll see a Rainbow Six character that has Asian heritage, or you'll see another character with Asian heritage. Like, we're not making enough sleeping dogs, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, we've been going for a while, so I think it's time to wrap up. So the last question is, what is something you want our listeners to know about Asia, being Asian, working the games, Asian person? Give us a thought. Wow. Give us an Asian thought to part with.
Unfortunately, I don't know if I have any Asian bon mots that I just sprinkle. I don't know. If you're an Asian person listening to this, understand that I've been in this industry 20 years. You can exist. You have space. You can thrive. It is getting easier. It is getting better. You will be heard. You will be valued. There are more of us every day. And there are more people with diverse backgrounds, not just Asian, in the games industry. And they understand the cross-section of privilege and oppression the same way you do. I think, don't give up. Just don't think you're not welcome. You are. Even if you find a bad boss or a bad studio or a bad manager, I mean, it's your choice. I'm not saying stick out for a thing that, you know, that gives you trauma. But at the same time, if you think, is it worth it? If you question yourself, I don't think you need to. I think the industry is big. There are kind, lovely people of every single ethnicity in this industry, including white, and we will, you know, we'll find our way. And if you're not Asian and you're listening to this, I think the only Asian thing I can tell you is, yeah, make more Asian friends, talk to us. So when you make these games, you know, if you're being disrespectful or if you're being respectful of the things that you're representing in the game, hire more diverse people, not just Asians, man. Hire, when you start your studios, when you start your teams, look around you. If there's like one token woman and one token brown person, that's not it, mate. It's, you know, not now. It never was, but it's worse now. Your game will come out and it will be lesser for it because it was made by a less richer mix of people. And yeah, just we exist. We make games. We have a good time, and we'd love to feed you dim sum, stroke samosas. Yeah, come talk to us. I guess that's what I would say.
Well, thank you very much, and have a great day. This is a great conversation.
And you and so. I thoroughly enjoyed this. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. Thank you to Dave Wallace for providing the music, and thank you to Therese Lance for providing the logo. Bye.